Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Anton Boyko, and today we will have our first English series webinar about Azure Overview for Node.js developers. And today we will talk mostly about Azure websites. I scheduled like 30 minutes of slides demonstration and also 30 minutes of live demo of Azure portal. So I will be talking in theory and also demonstrate in practice why Azure websites will be interested for Node.js developers. So let's go ahead. Azure websites, it's a fastest way to build your application for Microsoft Cloud. It's a very good phrase because in case you are using Azure websites, you can completely reuse all your previous experience programming like Node.js or some other open source platform. As I already said, Microsoft creates like a good cloud platform, but Microsoft will not force us to use only .NET. Microsoft also provides support for Node.js, for PHP, for Python, and also for Java. So basically, you can use any of these platforms, and you can start and create your first website just in several minutes. The next very important stuff is that you are able to use your own adventure. Because previously it was only like a traditional way of using some kind of shared hosting providers or some kind of other stuff, and you need to use only FTP deployment, but FTP deployment has some pros, like it's easy, it's simple, and it's very fast, but it's really hard to manage your source code. So Microsoft introduced for Azure websites and integration with a lot of very popular platform like Visual Studio Online, Cadablex, Custom Git Repository, GitHub, Bitbucket, and Dropbox. So if your website source code located on any of this platform, on any of these source controls, you can easily integrate it with Azure websites. You need to perform like, I don't know, maybe 5 clicks or something like this, and then you are ready to use it in a cloud. And of course, when we talk about cloud, one of the first questions will be, what about scaling? And let's try to understand what Microsoft provides from scaling perspective in a cloud. Of course, Microsoft provides us a manual scaling engine, but manual scaling engine, it's not really interesting because it works very simple. You just said, okay, previously it was, for example, like 2 nodes serving my website, and now I want to use like, I don't know, 5 nodes or 10 nodes to serve the same website because I have a lot of user right now. But in case of our autoscaling engine, everything will be performed automatically. So when you have only like small amount of users of requests, it will be only one node, for example, serving your site. After this, user starts to come to came to your site, and our autoscale realizes that we will be unable to serve all that users will only single nodes, so that's why autoscale will start a new nodes automatically. After that, another users came to our website, and AutoScale will continue to increase our nodes, and it will populate all these nodes until it reach some kind of boundary limit. And of course, another important stuff in autoscaling, that autoscaling works in two different ways, also in a like reverse scaling. So in case you do not need like 10 nodes for serving your site, and you will be able to handle all requests only with 3 nodes, autoscale will automatically reduce the number of nodes to an appropriate level. And here is a kind of short demonstration. It's almost like a screenshot from Azure portal, how you can configure your autoscaling engine. You need to configure only 2 parameters using these sliders. The first one is upper and lower boundary of instance count. So in my current example, I will every time have at least 2 instances serving my website, like 2 nodes. And in case I will start increasing the instance count, I will increase them only until they reach like 6 instances, and I will not create the new one just because I configured it in this way. And the second slider is about metric. For this metric, we can use CPU percentage, we can use memory percentage, disk queue lengths, HTTP queue lengths, data in and data out. And we also need to configure 2 values. The first one is 60% for scaling down, and the second one is 80% for scaling up. For example, if my CPU, like in average metric, my average CPU start growing more than 80%, then it will be like a signal for my autoscaling engine to create a new instance. In other case, for example, if my CPU will drop below 60%, then it will be another signal for autoscaling engine to start decreasing my instance number. And also, for all these rules, we are able to configure another important parameter. It's a kind of timeout for scaling up and scaling down. For example, as you may understand, this scaling is not really instantaneous. So in case I want to create like a new instance, it will take, I don't know, maybe something like 30 seconds or maybe 1 minute or something like this. And I need to explain to my autoscaler, if you already sent me a request, like please create me 1 new instance, you need to sleep for some timeout for this scaling up rule. Just because I need to provide Microsoft need to provide you with new compute powers, and your website should take some requests for new node, and it can take some time. So yes, we can also configure this timeout for scaling up and scale down rules. The next important stuff is site slots. It's a very interesting feature, and as far as I know, this feature for now present only in Microsoft Cloud. And the main idea is, let's say that you need to create a staging environment for your website. You have a production one, but you need a staging just because you do not want to roll out your new changes directly to production. It's very insecure. So you want to roll out them first to kind of staging environment. In this case, you reuse the same compute powers which were allocated for your website and create a new site slot. And you call this new site slot staging, for example. Now you have two website slot, production and staging, and starting from this point, you are able to roll out your new changes, for example, from Visual Studio Online to this staging environment. You roll out these changes, you test them somehow, and after some time you realize that, okay, now I'm completely ready to switch to production. And after you say that you are ready to switch to production, you just need to click one button on the portal, it's called swap, and after that your old production became on a staging slot, and your new staging now will take place of production website. Web jobs, it's another important stuff. I will explain what are web jobs about. So let's say that you have your website, but also you have some kind of continuously running jobs, and Microsoft, for example, allocates some compute power for your website, but there are absolutely no reason why you are unable to use the same compute power for running this continuously running jobs. And these jobs called web jobs in terms of Microsoft Azure Cloud. And the main idea of these web jobs that you have some queue for these jobs, and your worker will just take these jobs from this queue one by one. So it's very simple. You can write, you can wrap any code in your web job. So you can also say that web job, it's the same as scheduling task or continuously running task or some other stuff. And you can also use it on Azure websites. If you want some real life example, it can be, I don't know, maybe if a user uploads you an image and you want to resize this image in several other like original, medium and low version of this image. Why not? You can use web jobs for handling this task. Another important and interesting part of Azure websites is Traffic Manager. What is the main idea behind Traffic Manager? At the end of last year, Microsoft provided us with 14 regions for deploying your application. And of course, if your application is very popular, or if it's kind of enterprise application and you have users in USA, in Europe, and in Asia region, then it's kind of makes sense to host each to host your application in each data center, like in US data center, in Europe data center, and Asia data center, just because you want to provide a better user experience for your user, so they will not need to wait for huge network latency, because they will, I don't know, maybe connect from Asia region to USA region. It can take some time just because you need to go across the half of the world just to get to your server, and then your request, I mean like your response, needs to perform the same way just to provide this data for your customer. It's not really good experience. So that's why Microsoft create a service called Traffic Manager. Let's say that you host your application in three different data centers, and after this you are able to create a single entry point, and you are able to point this entry point to each of your data center. And basically your customers will go to www.yourapp.com, and Azure will automatically redirect them to maybe nearest data center, or maybe like random data center. It depends on the profile you use for your traffic manager. For now, traffic manager supports round robin profile. Traffic manager supports, as far as I know, performance profile, and also traffic manager supports fault handling profile or something like this. I do not remember the exact name. So basically, for now, it's three different profiles, and you can use any of these profiles for your traffic manager. And of course, in case of some data center or your application in this data center start facing some issues, and if this application is unable to answer your users' requests, then Traffic Manager will automatically exclude this application instance from your routing profile. My favorite topic is backups. And when we talk about backups, it's very important to understand the difference. And when I talk about difference, let's say it this way. Why do we need these backups in a cloud? Because at one point, Microsoft said that Microsoft will guarantee that your data will be saved. For example, if you save your data to some file system in Azure, Microsoft said, okay, this data is now saved till the end of the universe. Okay, and basically it will work. So why do we need backups in this case? And it's a very simple answer. Let's say that you have a team, and you have like some kind of new team member, and you said, okay, here is credentials for publishing your Azure website, but please do not delete, I don't know, like user images folder from the file system. And he said, oh, okay. Here, login, for example, via FTP, upload new files, and maybe accidentally or maybe for some evil purpose, he delete this user images folder. In this case, from Azure perspective, everything is okay because it was authorized access, and it was command triggered by user, and user asks Azure, please delete this folder, and Azure answer, okay, if you do not need this folder anymore, I will delete it. It's not a problem. And in this case, you are unable to complain to Azure just because everything was fine and everything was in like appropriate way from the Azure perspective. So this is a very simple but very common, I will say it, almost like daily or even weekly scenario for performing your backups. And now let's see what we have inside our backups. The first thing we have inside our backups is database, but this is optional, but very important. In case my application also have an external database, I can set, okay, I want this external database also to be saved as part of my current backup. And for example, if you have several databases, it's also not a problem. You can save several databases as part of your backup. The second stuff is website files. Of course, when we talk about website files, it's root of your web application and all other files you have under this root. So it will be your code files, it can be, like I said, some user images or some other stuff. So all content from file system also will be stored here. But it's not only these two stuff which you will have inside your backups. Also, you will have the third one, also very important, website settings manifest. Why it's so important? Let's say that you create your application and your application support multi-tenancy and you start selling your software using software as a service model. And now you have a lot of customers, they pay you a lot of money, everything is okay, but some of your customers start complaining that, I have some unhandled exception right here and I'm unable to use your application. And let's say that you try the same stuff locally, and locally you are unable to reproduce this issue. Sometimes it can be that everything works fine for every other client, but for especially this one, maybe it's because of his data, maybe because some other issues, but for this only customer, you have some unexpected and unpredictable issues. What can you do in this case? In this case, you can create a backup of your website, including this website settings manifest. And you can restore this backup on a new version of website. For example, for developers or for QAs or some other stuff. And you will have this customer data in the database. You will have the latest version of website's files from production. And also you will have all settings of Azure website environment. And after that, you will be able, for example, to connect using your debugger to this copy of production application and debug this application in copy of production environment. It's very important because if you will debug your live version, your production version of application, then you will affect all customers. But if you will debug like a production copy, you will affect only this production copy. So it's also a very good scenario, and you can use this scenario in your real life. And at the end, I want to go a little bit deeper inside website's architecture. So what we have here, we have some clients which can use different devices, phones, laptops, tablets, it's not important, and they want to access your website. First, they will come to Azure Data Center, and the first point in Azure Data Center will be Microsoft Azure Load Balancer. It's more like hardware load balancer, and after hardware load balancer, they will come to front-end IaaS, and this front-end server, which works under IaaS in application request routing mode, will redirect customer to your web farm. In our example, we have, for example, 6 nodes inside our web farm. From these 6 nodes, we will use only CPU and only RAM, because we have an external file server. For what purpose we need this external file server? Because let's say that you host your code on like 6 web nodes. It's underneath, it's basically like 6 completely isolated virtual machines. And let's say that some user upload, for example, some document or changed his avatar or something like this. And you need to distribute all these changes among all these 6 servers. To get rid of these synchronization issues, Microsoft just introduced an external file server. So basically, they will just connect to this file server and use this file server as a regular network shared folder. And every time, for example, a user uploads a new file, this file will be stored inside this file server, and automatically all other servers in your web farm are able to access this file from shared file server. Of course, this file server works on top of blob storage, just to provide you like a fail safe, and just to provide you with a guarantee that when you save your file will be saved till the end of the times. And also, what we have on this schema, also we have application database. It's an optional application database for your website. Another important stuff is runtime database. When we talk about runtime database, basically it stores all configuration of your working environment. And it's also a very interesting point, because you can easily change some kind of settings for your environment. I don't know, for example, maybe you want to change a connection string for your database, and all these changes will be automatically populated to all these servers in your web farm. And that's why they need like a single point for storage, and this single storage point is our runtime database. And of course, deployment server. Deployment server, it's called Project Kudu, or it's one of the part of Project Kudu. And this deployment server is able to run, for example, custom scripts, and you can use these custom scripts if you want to change your deployment process a little bit. For example, you can use this deployment script in case of Node.js application for restoring your NPM packages, because it's not a best practice to store your NPM packages inside your source control. And you can publish your application to Azure website, and Azure website will automatically restore all these dependencies. The same works for Bower packages, for example. So it's also kind of very common and straightforward scenario. And that's why I put also this deployment server on a schema here. Okay. For now, we are done with slides, and I will switch to my desktop sharing.
Now I will demonstrate my Azure portal. You can easily access the same Azure portal if you have an active Azure subscription, and it's quite easy to remember the link. It's portal.azure.com. So what we have on this portal? Let's try to create a new website for our application. I will click New. I will choose Web and Mobile. And here I will choose Website. Now I need to configure some values for my website. The first one, I need to create a unique URL, and it will be a subdomain of azurewebsites.net. I will zoom it a little bit. So let's say something like Eboico demo, something like this. Yeah, so this URL is available. Okay, and what we need to do right now, we can reuse already existing hosting plan, or we can create a new one. Let's create a new one, and after that I will explain what we are creating and why do we need it. The first stuff is pricing tier. I will click on View All, and when we choose our pricing tier, we have three pricing tiers in standard category. We have three basic pricing plans, and also we have free and shared. Inside each pricing plan on the portal, you will see like a short list of resources which you will get for this pricing plan. For example, for free pricing plan, you will have only 1 gigabyte of storage, and that's all. In case you choose shared pricing plan, you will also be able to attach your custom domain to your website, because in the free mode you are unable to attach a custom domain, but this pricing plan will cost you something. In case of basic pricing plan, you will obtain like a dedicated, for example, for B1, a dedicated one CPU core and almost 2 gigabytes of RAM. They will be really dedicated for only your application, because in free and shared mode you will have shared computer sources. And also you are able to scale up to 3 instances here. In case of standard pricing plan, you will also have some amount of dedicated resources, but also in this pricing plan already included like daily backups, like 5 side slots, traffic manager, and some other stuff. You can go to Azure portal and read in more details what are each pricing plan about. Okay, so I will choose S1. Now, resource group. A resource group, it's basically like a tag for your resources, just for you to understand. For example, if you have several databases, several websites, several other services for your application, just to understand which database or which websites reflect which application. So let's say that I will choose resource group demo. Also, you need to choose a subscription. I choose this resource group, so that's why I'm unable to change my subscription, because this resource group force you to use only the single subscription. And also location. For example, Brazil South, but let's say it's something like, I don't know, Central US, for example. Or no, let's use North Europe. And we need to provide a name for our new pricing plan. Let's set Eboica demo. It's okay. So we create a new pricing plan, Eboica demo, and we will create a new website on top of this pricing plan. I will hit create button, and now we need to wait a little bit until Azure provides us with all necessary resources. And for now, I will explain what is the difference between website and pricing plan in case of Azure websites. The main idea of pricing plans is to create like a web form. So you can say, I have one single pricing plan with one instance, for example, of server S1. It's a web form. And when we talk about web form, you are able to deploy as many sites as you want on this web form. Of course, they will share the compute resources of this web form. But basically, if you want to create a new site, or for example, if you want to create just like two sites, the first one, for example, I don't know, for your company website, and the second one for your company, I don't know, blog. And let's say that for now you are unable to realize the exact load of these websites, and you want spend as less money as possible. In this case, you are able to create like a web form from single server and host two websites on this web form. I will go to Azure portal. I will go to pricing plan, and I will go to websites. So I described that we want to create a single web form using single standard S1 server, and we want to host two or even three websites on this server. we will pay only like 74 American dollars per month in case this web farm will work for the whole month without any interruptions. So it's not related on how many websites you want to host on your Azure websites. It's related only on how many dedicated resources you use for managing all these websites load. Okay, I will return to my Azure Management Portal. I have my website already up and running. Let's click Browse button. And yeah, we see some test page, and it says this website has been successfully created. Okay, cool. So we can see that our website is working now. Okay, let's go back to our management portal. For now, we have a lot of placeholders here, but they are mostly empty just because for now we do not have any statistics like request statistics, error statistics, and all other stuff here. But what we have now, what can I demonstrate to you? Let's go to settings. And let's see what we have inside our settings. We have a lot of categories here. Let's go to application settings. So, what we have inside our application settings? We can choose an exact version of .NET framework in case we are creating a .NET site. We can choose an exact version of PHP. We can choose the exact version of Java. And when we say that we want to use Java, we're also able to choose we want to run Java on top of Tomcat or on top of Jetty. Also the same for Python. Also, we can choose we want to use 32 bits or 64 bits platform. We can enable or disable WebSockets, and also we can switch or we can turn on an always on mode. What is the main idea of this always on mode? In case, for example, in case you have no requests for your web application for a long time, Microsoft can make a decision. I mean, not Microsoft, but even IIS, Microsoft Web Server, can make a decision that he can terminate this process, which is serving your website. And of course, when the next request came to this website, Microsoft IIS web server will start creating a new virtual application, start creating new threads, new process for your website, and it can take like maybe 2 or 3 extra seconds for your application to up and run. So that's why I will recommend you to always turn always on and use it. Okay, let's scroll a little bit down here. And what we also have here, we have two sections. The first one is app settings, and the second one called connection strings. I already described that all Azure websites works on top of Microsoft IIS Web Server. When we talk about Microsoft IIS Web Server, you can configure all these servers using webconfig XML files. And these webconfig files have two sections. The first one also called app settings. The second one is connection strings. And we are able to create new values here. Let's say that in my connection strings, I want to create a new connection string with name database and some value as a value. What will happen when I deploy my website here? Azure websites will go through my web config, and in case Azure websites will found in connection strings section a key with name database, Azure websites will replace the value of this key with my some value. You can use it, for example, in like a daily scenario, when you do not want to store your database, like production database connection string, in your source control. In this case, you are able to store your production connection strings only on Azure portal, and only those persons who are able to access your Azure portal will be able to see these connection strings. And in source control, you can basically store like database, like a name of connection string, and value equals to, I don't know, TCP colon localhost slash mydb, so something like this. It's also more important stuff, and the same works for app settings. And also we have a very important stuff here. It's a checkbox called slot settings. What is the main idea of this slot settings? I already described you the idea of switching the side slots like production and staging. But let's say that we have one connection string for production and the second one for staging. The main idea previously was like when we switch these environments, they will also switch all settings. And previously, when we hit swap button to swap staging and production, after successful redeploy, we will have on production a connection string for staging database. So it's really make no sense. So that's why now you are able to hit this checkbox and said, okay, now this settings, this setting is slot specific. So it's not important will I click swap button or not. In any case, I will have this setting only on this slot. So it's also help us to manage this scenario which I described about switching websites and not switching databases. Okay, I will discard all this stuff and close this blade. And now let's go and see what we have inside scale settings. It's also very interesting because for now, I just want to demonstrate that here we have like the same picture as I show on my slide. We have this scale up and down rule from instance one, like from one instance up to two instances. and we will use CPU percentage as a metric, and we will scale down when our load drops below 60% and scale up or on 80% or more. Let's say that I want to add a new metric. I will just hit this add metric at the top, add metric button at the top. And here, what I need to configure. I need to choose an exact metric. Let's say that I want to choose memory percentage. Memory percentage. Now I need to configure my rule. So first I need to configure scale up rule. And I will choose that my metric should be greater than, I don't know, let's say 75% over the past, let's say 10 minutes. And I will scale up for one instance, or I can say it even for, I will scale up for two instances. For two instances, it will not work in our current scenario, just because if we have one instance and scale it to plus two, or by plus two, we will have three instances. But on this global configuration, we say that we want to scale only from one to two. So let's say one, and call down in minutes. I don't know, let's say that 15 minutes is okay. And then the same for scale down rules. So let's say that threshold is something like, I don't know, 50% over the past 20 minutes, scale down by single instance and cool down 30 minutes, something like this. So when I configure all this value, I just need to hit the save button above, and that's all. Now I have like second rule for my scale up and scale down engine. Let's go through another tab and let's talk a little bit about deployment slots. So for now, as you can see, I have no deployment slots, but it's not a really kind of good illustration, because I always have at least one deployment slot. It's called production. But let's say that we want to add a staging deployment slot. I click add slot at the top. I need to create a new name. Let's say staging, and also I'm able to create this slot with default configuration, or I can copy my settings from current production, like Eboico, Demo, and blah blah blah. When I will add my staging deployment slot, and let's say that after staging I want to add maybe dev or QA or something like this, the only thing and when I decide to add a new deployment slot, I will have more options here. So okay, let's say that we want to create a new staging slot. I will click OK. I just want to illustrate another very important point inside this stage and slots. So we have this staging slot, and the main idea I want to illustrate is the staging slots behave like a new Azure website. So I am able to configure all stuff like for regular deployment slot, but it will be like two different endpoints. So as you can see, the URL for my staging slot is eboico diva blah 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 dash staging. So that is the only one difference. For now, I have like a default page on the production site and default page on staging site, but either way, they behave like two different websites. And on top here, I have this swap button. And when I click swap, I need to choose source and I need to choose destination. So I return back to Azure portal. And here I clicked on a swap button. And after that, I am able to use source and destination and click OK, just to replace staging with production and production with staging. I will close all this stuff. And the last thing I want to show you is backups. How you can work with your backups from the portal. The first thing you need to configure when you talk about backups is storage account. Why it's so important? Because basically all your backups is just zip files. Wait a second. I'm sorry, can you confirm that for now everyone are able to hear me? I see this message in chat, so we can hear you now. Okay, sorry. I will continue. So when we talk about Azure backups, first thing we need to do, we need to configure our storage account. Why? Because all backups, it's just zip files, and inside these zip files, we will have database, file system, and all other stuff. So you need to choose a new storage account or use an existing one. Let's say that I want to use this account. And you need to choose a container. Container, it's basically a folder inside your account. Let's say transfer. And click OK. Now your backup destination is configured. And now you are able to create your backup and restore your site manually using these two buttons. And included databases, we have nothing here. If you want to include database in your backup, you need to configure this database inside connection string section, as I showed you previously. And also you are able to say that I want to use backup on some kind of scheduled basis. And you are able to provide a frequency in days. You are able to provide from which date you want to begin these backups and also time for these backups. You can also provide a retention for your backups also in days. And also you can say that you want to keep always at least one backup of your website. And here inside all backups, you will see your backup history, and you will be able to restore your backup anytime on top of existing website.